Medical Frontiers is an information program sponsored by the Allegheny Health Network. The information featured on Medical Frontiers is intended solely to further the public's general knowledge of current developments in the field of medicine and should not be relied upon as offering advice, diagnoses, or opinions as to any individual treatment or problem. Nothing should replace the relationship that you maintain with your personal physician.
Well, good evening. Dr. Gerald Pfeiffer here on Medical Frontiers, and it's a little bit of a cloudy day out there in the Berg, but it's nice to at least have some warm weather. Tonight on Medical Frontiers, we're going to be talking about hearing and balance disorders, and we're very, very fortunate to have Dr. Douglas Chen with us. He's with AHN. He is an otolaryngologist, and which means that he specializes in primarily in the ear. And the ear is, if you heard our little tease there before the news, has a lot to do with balance. We're going to be talking about that. And there is a hearing and balance disorder laboratory and at Allegheny General Hospital, which is part of AHN. And Dr. Chen is the co-director of the Hearing and Balance Disorder Center at AHN. So we're very, very fortunate to have him. And I think he can actually hear now what we're saying. And since we're on talking about hearing tonight, it's a good thing to be able to hear, isn't it, Dr. Chen?
Oh, yes. And that's okay. Why everybody has two ears.
Okay. Well, welcome back to Medical Frontiers. We really... I think it was about a year ago that you were here, and we had a good show talking about hearing problems, and also I think we talked about tumors behind the ear, acoustic neuromas.
Yes, we did.
Didn't we talk about that? Okay, hearing imbalance. How are they related?
So the ear has several parts, but The two main components of the ear are the hearing mechanism, which consists of the eardrum, the three little ear bones, and we call that the conduction mechanism. And it gathers sound waves and transmits or conducts those sound waves to the inner ear where the little nerve endings are. And the little nerve endings transform sound energy into electrical energy and sends it along the hearing nerve to the brain. The other component of the inner ear is the balance mechanism, and or the so-called labyrinth. And the two are actually anatomically connected, and so the hearing and balance system in the inner ear are intimately related to each other.
They're anatomically connected physically, and then there are also that connection, like you talked about, the electrical impulse and that type of thing. So how does that mechanism, that vestibular mechanism, how does that control our balance? How does that actually happen?
Well, the inner ear is actually only just one part of balance. So the brain, as it feeds to the muscles and joints, is also part of balance. The eyes, in terms of visual references, in terms of whether you're swaying. But the inner ears are kind of like your gyroscopes of
your
body.
That's the word I was looking for. Yeah, it's like a gyroscope that that helps keep the plane that we're flying, you know, with the wings level and so on. So that's the way it works, right?
Right. So the inner ear is filled with fluid, and the fluid within the inner ear is sensitive to acceleration, either angular acceleration, like circular, or linear acceleration, going in a straight line. And the fluid, when we're accelerated, has a mass. And because it has a mass, it has inertia. And so when we accelerate, the fluids tend not to accelerate. And as our bodies accelerate, but the fluid doesn't, that difference stimulates the nerve endings in the inner ear.
Okay. When we were kids and you'd spin around, spin around, and spin around long enough that you couldn't stand up. That's what we were doing. We were moving that fluid around, and those little hair-like cilia in that inner ear were, sensing that, and they weren't able to function correctly because we were disturbing that that inner ear.
That's right? That's exactly right.
Okay. And you were talking about, it's not just the ear, it's our eyes and so on. And one of the things we know about taking care of the musculoskeletal system is that proprioception. And that proprioception is knowing where your foot is without looking at it or without touching it or whether your knee is bent or straight. You know whether your knee is bent or straight with your eyes closed. And those are signals that are coming from the little nerve endings within your knee or your ankle or foot, so that you know where that is. And when you lose that proprioception, it can be one of the things that is disturbing your balance. And with pilots, and some people says, well, I never get dizzy, Yeah, everybody can get dizzy. Everybody can get disoriented. Everybody can develop vertigo under the right conditions, right?
Oh, yes. Balance disorders are extremely common. In fact, once you get over 65, it's probably the most common complaint that's brought in by a patient to their primary care physician.
Yeah. So and as our population gets older and older, Okay. So like in the balance center, okay, what are things that you do in the balance center to help make a diagnosis and help people with a balance problem?
So the balance center, it's actually the hearing and balance center, but one part of it's completely devoted to the evaluation of balance disorders. But specifically, we have the full comprehensive testing battery of balance testing equipment, not only for the inner ear, but for the proprioceptive type of issues that older patients have. It's the proprioceptive things. There's a machine called a posturography. It's basically a computerized sobriety test, basically.
Okay.
And so we can put people on this platform, and we can see how they sway with their eyes open, eyes closed, and the computer picks up all the patterns, and there are sets of norms, there are sets of data from people with inner ear problems, there are sets of data from people with brain problems, and so we can kind of pair up what's what. With various disease processes.
Okay, well, that's great. Okay, this is Medical Frontiers. We're here with Dr. Chen, and we're talking about hearing and balance disorders. So give us a call at 866-391-1020, Dollar Bank Instant Access at kdk.com, kdkradio.com, and also 866-391 is the Wright Automotive text line. So we'll be back after the break. Okay, we're back on Medical Frontiers. Dr. Piper here with Dr. Douglas Chen, and we're talking about hearing and balance disorders tonight. And why don't we go right to our phone calls, line one, and that looks like Sammy?
Yes, this is Sammy from Carlisle, Pennsylvania.
Okay, from Carlisle, yeah. Okay, Sammy, you're on the air. Do you have a question?
That's my nickname.
Okay.
First name is Sid.
Okay, Sid.
It's my real name.
Okay, whatever. Sid from Carlisle, what's your question?
My question is this. I have a TV set, and I was having trouble hearing it. And I went to a TV technician, and he says, you need to put your speakers on the front of the set. And my speakers are on the top of the set.
Okay.
So I went out and purchased some... you can buy a kit out there, too. But it'll put your speakers up front. But the trouble with that is that there's too many knobs and so forth to turn. You got to move this, move that. I need something simple like that comes with the TV. When you turn it on, you hear the sound.
Okay.
So I got to find some technician who can transfer the speakers to the front of the set.
Okay. So you haven't done that yet, right?
I haven't done that yet because I've been have so many other things on my list.
Okay. Well, let's see what Dr. Chen has to say about the location of speakers for your TV. Dr. Chen, how about that?
Well, first of all, it might not even be the location. TV speakers nowadays, especially on the thin panel flat sets, just have notoriously cheap speakers that come with the TV. And it sounds like whoever recommended that you get one of these separate boxes with speakers that are higher fidelity. And so I think what he's done is he's just gotten you better fidelity speakers.
Yeah. Okay. So it sounds like he's going to solve his problem once he finds somebody that knows how to hook them up.
Okay, another quick question.
Okay.
Another quick question.
Yeah.
When are you going to do a program on heart health and prostate?
Those would be separate problems. Those are two separate organs. And in a year's time, we probably do two or three shows on the prostate, and we probably do five or six shows on heart health. So what you need to do is just listen every week. All right?
Because it's a jungle out there for the prostate problem.
Yeah, that's right. But we'll be all right. We'll talk about it, okay?
Great.
Okay, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Larry in Butler. Good evening, Larry. Do you have a question?
Hi. My question is, if I am in a moving vehicle, I can read no more than about 1 minute before I start to feel dizziness and discomfort. I'm wondering, is that related to the same mechanism that is affected on a ship when you're on the open water and you get motion sickness? And why, if there's a simple answer, are some people just not as susceptible to it?
Okay.
You know, people can sit on the bus and read for 10, 15 minutes and they feel fine.
Okay, well, Dr. Chen is nodding his head yes, and now we're going to have his voice tell us about that. How about that, Dr. Chen?
Well, the symptoms that you're describing are motion sensitivity or motion sickness, and it has to do with a conflict between what your eyes are seeing, what your brain's feeling, and what your inner ear is sending to the balance to the brain also. So there's conflicting information in terms of what's being fed in. And so when you're reading, you're reading at what looks to be like a stationary book, yet your inner ear is feeling the motions of the bus. And so that conflict of information leads to motion sickness. The same with on a ship. You're on a big ship, you don't feel much, but there's rocking that's occurring. And so, again, there's a conflict of information that's occurring between what you're feeling and what's being fed into the balance system. And, yes, there's a significant variation from individual to individual in terms of tolerance of motion sickness and motion sensitivity. I'm kind of like you. I can read for a minute or two, and then I start getting sick. My wife can do jigsaw puzzle or do crossword puzzles in the car for hours on end without having getting any type of motion sensitivity.
You know, sometimes on a cruise, you're prescribed these scopolamine patches and so on. Does that help with that?
It does. It tends to help if you take it before you get sick, though.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know that you have a tendency towards motion sickness, and you're going on a cruise or an airplane flight or a bus ride, take it, you know, several hours before you get on. And if you're on the boat, you might even want to take it several days until you kind of get adapted. The way Dramamine works, it actually suppresses the balance system, puts it to sleep, basically, so it's not getting that inaccurate information.
Yeah, and there is, over time, most people will develop some bit of a tolerance. I know in the Navy, you know, when the Seaboys go out, a lot of them get, by the time they're out there for several weeks or months, why they get used to it.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the bases of what we call vestibular exercises, vestibular physical therapy. Some people have this chronically, this dizziness or balance issue chronically, and if it's truly from the inner ear system, we can use that phenomena where the balance mechanism can kind of become adapted to the situation. So we actually have patients do exercises that make them dizzy, and we know it works. The ice skaters can do their 720 degree spins multiple times without falling over and getting sick, and that's because they practice doing it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. Thank you very much, Larry. Okay. Good luck to you. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Gregory in Point Breeze. Good evening, Gregory. You have a question?
Good evening. Yes, I do. I was lucky enough to catch you at the time I needed the help, I think.
Okay.
But what I have is years ago when I was working in a steel mill, piece of equipment went bad, and it had a very high-pitched sound, and I lost the hearing of one of my ears. Now I'm starting to feel I'm getting imbalanced, and I don't know whether it's coming from that, but now I'm unstable as far as walking is concerned. I'm not drunk or nothing like that, but not sure if with it.
Okay. How about that, Dr. Chen?
Most of the things that affect the inner ear are usually not serious problems. But when one of the red flags that makes us always concerned is what we call unilateral auditory symptoms, hearing loss in one ear and not the other. And then when you combine that with dizziness, that really kind of sets off a red flag. And that's because one of the few things that's really harmful are tumors of the ear. And tumors of the ear are usually unilateral. And so you get hearing loss in one ear, not the other, and it can affect the balance system. So again, when we see unilateral auditory symptoms associated with dizziness, we usually recommend people get an MRI to make sure that they don't have a tumor or growth in the ear that can get big and cause brain problems.
Okay. Does that answer your question, Gregory?
I want to know, is that the only way? Is there any way I can determine if that ear is causing the problem?
Well, there are all kinds of tests to determine whether the ear is causing your balance problem. Certainly, we know that the hearing is being caused by an ear problem. But the only way we can exclude a tumor of the ear is with an MRI.
Okay,
Okay, good.
Thanks okay, Gregory.
Thanks a lot.
Good luck to you. Okay. Real quick, is that Bobby? Bobby in McKees Rocks?
Bonnie.
Okay. Hi. Real quick, we're running up against a break here. You have a question?
Okay. I have two of them, actually. What causes an overabundance of earwax? And can you be born with a collapsed eustachian tube? I was told I was.
Okay, two questions. What about a lot of earwax?
So the earwax is made by cerumen glands, wax glands of the skin of the ear canal. They're basically modified sweat glands. Some people just sweat more than others. So
yeah.
It's not anything pathologic, disease process. It's just kind of an individual trait.
Okay. How about the collapsed eustachian tube?
So the eustachian tube is a tube that goes from your nose to your ear. It's responsible for aerating or equalizing pressure behind the eardrum. And some people can be born with it.
Okay. Thank you very much for the call. We do have to take a break. This is Medical Frontiers, and we're talking about hearing and balance disorders. Next week, we're going to be talking about Ask the Doctor Anything. But tonight, it's Hearing and Balance. We'll be back.
The following program is paid for by the Allegheny Health Network.
Hey, we're back on Medical Frontiers talking about hearing and balance disorders with Dr. Chen from Allegheny Health Network. He is the co-director of the Hearing and Balance Center at Allegheny General Hospital. And let's go to number one on the phones, October in Butler. Good evening, October. Haven't heard from you for a couple of weeks.
Good evening. I have a question for you. When I was dealing with acid reflux, and I still do, not as bad, but sometimes even if I would be sitting up and I would swallow, it felt like the acid was going up in my eustachian tube, and I was told that some of it was. What would cause it to radiate up to the ear?
Okay, Dr. Chen, can can contents, liquid contents from the stomach with acid reflux end up in the ear?
It can, especially in children. It's children who are being fed in a kind of recumbent position can have reflux that can be responsible for ear infections.
I'm 64, and I still got it.
So you're not an infant, okay? You're not sucking on a bottle, okay?
Still can happen with adults, but usually less of a problem. But you can get acid reflux that can extend all the way up and influence the function of the eustachian tube, cause plugging and popping, cracking, and theoretically even middle ear infections.
It felt like something was, as if somebody was pouring scalding water, like I was being burned.
Well, I guess that could be a result of the acid action, right, Dr. Chen?
That's correct.
Yeah.
But, you know, the ultimate problem is not your ears, it's the acid reflux.
Right, right. And there's medication for that, and I think you actually had some surgery, did you not, for that?
Yes, I did, but I feel like something seems to be coming back, so I have to go to the doctor, because when I swallow anything cold, it literally takes my breath away.
Well, I would suggest you go back to see your gastroenterologist, right?
That's where I'm going.
Okay, October. Thank you very much for the call. And
you're welcome.
Okay, let's go to Bill in the North Hills. Bill from the North Hills, how are you? Hello, Bill. You on the air?
Yes.
Yeah, you're there. You're on the air. Medical Frontiers.
Okay, I'm just wondering if there's any specific type of exercise that could assist with balance problems.
Okay, we talked a little bit about that, but Dr. Chen, what are some of the exercises that can be done to help with balance?
So balance is a very generic type of term, and as we've mentioned, it can come from balance disorders can originate from brain problems, inner ear problems, orthopedic problems. And so the first thing you need to do is kind of figure out where the problem is coming from. One of the very most common problems that we see is called positional vertigo, which Dr. Pfeiffer is a expert at. that has to do with the little crystals coming loose in the inner ear. It causes true spinning vertigo, room spinning, but in between spinning, it kind of leaves you with an off balance and sensation. And for that, we do a specific type of maneuver called an Epley maneuver, where we rotate the patient's head one way and then the other way, roll them over and then sit them up. And that actually moves the particles around in the inner ear and moves them into an area that doesn't cause dizziness. That's the most common exercise for the most common inner ear problem that we do, the Epley maneuver. But that's for a specific problem with a specific treatment.
I've heard of that type of exercise and or problem, but I have like a shuffling gait whenever I walk, and I know I'm shuffling because of a balance type situation.
Okay. Well, what I would suggest you do, since you have the Dr. Chen has had a little trouble with his earphones, but at the Hearing and Balance Center, they could pinpoint that as to exactly what's going on. And if you want to make an appointment to do that, you can call 412-DOCTORS, or if you have a smartphone or a computer, you can go to ahn.com and just do that appointment online. That's a Hearing and Balance Center at Allegheny General Hospital. And it sounds like, with that particular problem that you have, that it would be a good thing to be checked out.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much, sir.
Okay, Bill. Yeah. Thanks so much for the call. This is Medical Frontiers. We are talking tonight about hearing and balance problems, and having a little technical problem here, but hopefully we can get that straightened out. And Dr. Chen, you still can't hear, huh? Okay. Well, we're going to talk when Dr. Chen comes back online here that about tinnitus or ringing of the ears. And this message came in on our text line, 866-391-1020, which is the Wright Automotive text line. And you can also get in touch with us by going to, on a computer, you can email us by going to the kdkradio.com on your computer, and that is the Dollar Bank Instant Access line is how you can email us. Do you have any sound there now, Dr. Chen?
I can hear again.
Okay, there you go. It's good for a otolaryngologist to be able to hear. We had a text message about tinnitus. What is ringing of the ears? What causes that, and is there anything that can be done?
So tinnitus is actually any type of noise in the ear, ringing, buzzing, crickets. And it's really a non-specific symptom, kind of like a fever. And so we really try to find the underlying cause of the tinnitus before we start treating it. It's usually related to a hearing loss. And so we try to treat the underlying hearing loss cause either with surgery or hearing aid or whatever, but we treat the primary process that's causing the tinnitus. If it's related to age-related hearing loss and noise-induced hearing loss, the most common treatment that we have is something called masking, external noise, suppressing the noise inside your ear. So like a radio, TV, fan, white masking noise. There really isn't a pill to treat tinnitus, okay. Although there are a number of medications out there that kind of propose that they can treat tinnitus.
Yeah. What about, hearing your pulse? Is that a type of tinnitus?
Yes, we call that pulsatile tinnitus, and that's a very specific type of tinnitus that also is one of those red flag type of issues, especially if it's in one ear. Because there are vascular abnormalities that can cause pulsing in your ear, serious ones such as AV malformations, mm-hmm. AV fistulas. They're blood vessel malformations that can cause that can burst actually and cause bleeding. And mm-hmm. then there's some vascular tumors of the ear that the glomus jugulari tumors. Can cause pulsing in one ear or not the other. So
if you have that, you ought to be checked, right?
That's correct.
Okay, let's go back to our phone lines. Joe in Swickley. Joe, how are you?
Fine, doctors. I'd like to ask, I have a foot neuropathy. I don't really have any feeling in my feet. I'm also completely blind, and I just can't stand up and walk. If I try to, I fall over. And I guess that has to do with balance.
Well, it sure is. In fact, we talked a little bit about that, but here's an individual who is lacking some sensation in his feet, so he's not getting... doesn't know where his feet are, and he's blind, so he doesn't have the visual cues. That's pretty common for somebody like that to have a balance problem, right?
I would say that if he didn't have a balance problem, he'd be unique, because basically we have three support systems, the brain, its connections to the feet, and then your eyes and the inner ear. And so you're missing your vision and your proprioception, and that just leaves the inner ear to maintain balance. And basically, the only thing that physical therapy is going to help, it's going to help in terms of being able to substitute some of your other missing senses. One of the things is going to be like having extra support, like a cane or an assisted device.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the call. We need to take a break. This is Medical Frontiers. We're talking about hearing and balance disorders. Give us a call, 866-391-1020. Well, we're back on Medical Frontiers and talking about hearing and balance disorders with Dr. Chen. Let's go to John in Pittsburgh, line two. John, how are you?
Hi. Well, a little less than fine recently.
Okay.
Here's the problem that I have. First of all, it seems that I have a problem with both ears, left and right. However, the one on my left ear has been corrected. There was a considerable amount of earwax, which was a little difficult to get out, but they got it. Okay. And so my left ear is just fine. A couple of days after that happened, it got corrected, that my right ear, okay, when I swallow, okay, you get this, like, sound. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
A little bit. And I had a MD take a look. There's no wax in that ear, okay? But, however, here's something that you should know. From the past couple of months, I've had been blowing my nose a little more often than regularly, okay? And I have a bad habit of blowing a little bit too hard. And I guess you call it blowing your eardrum out a little bit. It takes about 5 or 10 minutes and it'll pop back and be okay. But the problem is this thing where, you know, I swallow and it's quite annoying that you get this little sound in your eardrum or whatever. And somebody mentioned perhaps maybe an antihistamine such as Zyrtex or Allegra would help with that. And the information the MD gave me says here that it could take maybe 3 months or even longer for perhaps it could cure on its own. My question is this. Is there anything that I can do that can speed this along, maybe of helping it get better?
Okay, Dr. Chen.
So what you're describing is the middle ear or the eustachian tube trying to equalize pressure. There's a tube that goes from your nose to your ear that equalizes pressure behind the eardrum versus the atmosphere. It's not a rigid.
Sometimes I may mention this in driving along the parkway from Swissville out to Monroeville. You know, you go up the hill considerably, and recently it's been like it'll happen it does what your ear would do if you're in a non-pressurized airplane.
Yeah. So the tube is not a rigid conduit. It's got muscles, nerves, cartilage. And every time you yawn or swallow, the tube opens up, and then it goes back into its resting state of being closed. And if there's too much pressure that builds up as the tube opens up and the pressure is equalized relatively rapidly, sometimes you'll hear the pressure change. It'll be a pop, crack. It can even be like a little squeegee noise.
That happens like sometimes when I'm driving in the car and the elevation, you know, mm-hmm. changes or whatever. But even right now, as I speak to you, if I would swallow, okay, 9 out of 10 times, not every single time, but about 9 out of 10 times, you get this little, you know, sound in the eardrum.
Is that worse in the morning?
No, it's about the same all the time.
Okay.
But I do sleep on my right, okay, typically. And as a matter of fact, that's what I think caused some earwax problem in my left ear, because I was trying to sleep on my left-hand side for another little problem that I had, and that may have caused the earwax. But the earwax problem, that's been corrected on the left ear.
Great.
It's the right ear. And, I, you know, what precipitated this little problem?
How about these antihistamines and so on? Do they help sometimes, Dr. Chen?
You know, if you read the medical literature, they do not help. It's been studied extensively. Antihistamines, decongestants, nasal steroid sprays just don't have any impact on it. Although, typically, we do recommend that you try something like that. It may be because we're trying to buy some time, because many of these problems are self-limiting.
Right. Because I am sneezing a little more than normal right now and blowing my nose a little bit more normal, and like there's like phlegm or whatever it is in my throat a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, if it's allergy precipitated, then maybe an antihistamine might help. But again, if you read the medical literature, if you take all comers who have eustachian tube dysfunction, there's not a statistically significant impact by using antihistamines or decongestants. But it's worth a try.
Right. What would be the next step if it doesn't get better?
You might even try a nasal steroid spray like fluticasone.
Hold on a second. Would that happen to be, just one second here, F-L-U-T-I-C-A-S-O-N-E?
There you go.
There you go, yep. That's it.
Prospionate or something like that?
Yeah.
Yes, that's it.
Okay.
That might be of assistance?
That might be of assistance.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to another John in Squirrel Hill. Good evening, John, on line one. What's your question? Hello, John, Squirrel Hill?
Oh, I think it must be Joan.
Oh, Joan. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. That sounds more like a Joan.
I wanted to talk to the doctor about my vestibular problem. Actually, I'm going again to be checked. I had this about, was diagnosed without crystals, probably, not sure if it was 9 months ago, something like that, and was pretty bad. I felt like a prisoner in my home. And I went to the specialist here in the city and was tested. It was pretty rigorous. And was given Clonopan, which did help, and it does help. And then it seemed to disappear after, about 3 months ago, it seemed like things had eased up. But now it's returned again. I wouldn't say as bad, but when I drive especially, motion, walking around the supermarket, and I'm trying not to take the pill because it'll go away once I, stop the motion. Is this something that's going to reoccur?
Is this primarily causing dizziness or?
Yes, I get lightheaded. I call it lightheaded. I'm very careful, about turning my head, or looking down.
Okay, but it seems to be related to some type of motion, quickly turning your head or something like that.
Yes, and when I'm in the car now, I've noticed more. As I say, I'm going back tomorrow just to be checked. I don't know what they're going to find. I don't have crystals. And I knew a woman that had this all her life until she died in her late 80s.
Uh-huh.
And I was so afraid that I would have this forever.
Okay, we're running out of time here. But Dr. Chen, how about this?
What they meant by not having crystals is that's not a disease process. What they're telling you is that you don't have positional vertigo.
Okay.
Which everybody assumes that they do have. And they're treating you with a very common, what we call vestibular suppressant, like meclizine.
Uh-huh.
Clonopin is a very powerful vestibular suppressant, which takes out motion sensitivity. It's in the diazepine family,
yes.
which can really help you symptomatically.
Right. I mean, I break the pill in half. I don't take a whole.
Okay.
Used to take two halves.
Okay, we're running out of time.
But it's just, concerning me because I feel like I limit myself. I get frightened.
Yeah, we're running.
If I go out, I get lightheaded driving back and all. So
we're running out of time. You need to discuss that with your physician. Okay, this is Medical Frontiers talking about hearing and balance disorders tonight. Next week, it is going to be Ask the Doctor Anything. We need to take a break. We'll be back.
Medical Frontiers is an information program sponsored by the Allegheny Health Network. The information featured on Medical Frontiers is intended solely to further the public's general knowledge of current developments in the field of medicine and should not be relied upon as offering advice, diagnoses, or opinions as to any individual treatment or problem. Nothing should replace the relationship that you maintain with your personal physician.